You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller. Hello, and welcome to episode 235 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I am Stephen Seagraves, today joined by Seth Miller and a guest, Jerry, known as Jamboree on Twitter. He's almost a 3 million miler on American Airlines, but now playing as a free agent in the airline world. Welcome to the show, Jerry.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for inviting me.
And if people want to know who you are, you're a listener of the podcast that sent us a note saying you would love to come on the show and talk about some of the topics.
Exactly. I've been listening for a long time, and I look forward to every episode. So this is something awesome. I enjoy doing.
I'm just amazed that that whole, hey, if you want to be a guest, let us know on Twitter thing worked.
Just a note for the listeners, right?
Yeah. So this is proof that when I say stupid things like that at the end of episodes, I really mean them.
Yeah. So it's great to have you on, Jerry. So we're just going to jump right in, and where you have an opinion, interrupt us, especially Seth, and we'll get your opinion. So okay. First story, I guess the biggest news kind of today as we record this on Sunday, March 10th, is the Ethiopian flight that crashed. It was on its way to Kenya, I believe. Is that correct?
Yep, Nairobi.
Yeah, and all lives aboard were lost, unfortunately. It was a 737 MAX. I don't think we want to jump to any conclusions as to cause or anything right now, but there's, for me personally, the question of, is a MAX safe at this point, since we've had two crashes now in 5 months? And I mean, because there's a ton of these planes out there, right? Southwest has them, American has them, and United has them in the United States, and a bunch of other carriers around the world have 737.
Sure, Norwegian's got a whole bunch. They really are. I think we're up over 400 delivered, or close to 400 delivered. So there's a lot of them out there. What I'd say is it's spooky right now, and that's just a total lack of information. Always that uncertainty breeds all sorts of challenges and problems. And you know, again, no idea what happened on this one, other than the aircraft was sufficiently, you know, stable that the pilot was able to indicate that they were having problems and request return to the airport. So it wasn't a spontaneous incident, or a spontaneous catastrophic incident necessarily. But also, we really don't know a ton more than that. There's a little bit of flight radar data, but coverage in Ethiopia is limited. So it's, I'd say it's, A, the flight radar data is far from conclusive on a good day. In this case, it's even less so. But it's spooky.
But Seth, yeah. I mean, it's been 8 months since Lion Air had their incident. If I look at the profiles of both flights, they sound very similar. Again, I would fly on a MAX today. I'm not afraid of them. I don't think there's anything significantly wrong with them. But what happened in both incidents, from what we know so far, seems very similar.
Yeah, and that there are definitely, I mean, there do appear to be a lot of similarities, if nothing else, reported troubles shortly after departure, trying to return to the airport, nose down, it seems, rapid descent at the end, issues. 350 is the number of deliveries I've got right now, so almost 400.
That's a lot of planes out there.
Yeah, and it's across a bunch of airlines. Southwest is the most in the United States, followed by American, I believe, just over 30 and just over 20, respectively.
So, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to ground their MAXs just yet, but based on the findings, right, of this investigation, potentially we could see 737 MAXs grounded across the U.S. and maybe the world. And that's a big impact, right? Especially, like you said, Southwest is the biggest customer in the United States, and they're using them pretty heavily.
What I'd say is if there was a grounding, and right, this did happen with the 787s, you know, I won't say roughly this far, but a year after entry into service or so, the battery thing came up and they grounded them until they got it fixed. One thing to think about with a potential grounding is a regulator will almost certainly not ground the planes until or unless there is also a specific sort of set of circumstances that could end that grounding, if that makes sense, right? So in the 787 case, it was, okay, when the battery catches on fire, it will burn a hole through the fuselage and that's a problem. When you have a solution that can vent the, you know, liquid, whatever, and contain the fire and do all these things, then we will revoke the grounding. And so coming up with sort of a similar set of circumstances here, I'm not sure we know enough about what it really is to come up with the plan to fix it so that we could have that in place. But yep, it's definitely something to think about. And I would also assume that if that rule came down from the U.S. because it's an FAA certified plane, everybody else would follow basically immediately.
So Seth, Would you fly the new Southwest 737 MAX to Hawaii now?
Sure.
Okay.
I think I would. I don't know that it's necessarily more or less safe than any of the other commercial airplanes out there. And so that's partly, I'm just not sure. But at the same time, the level at which they are safe is, you know, the frequency of incidents is very low. And yes, I would prefer that to be less common. Right. There's, 300 something people who have died now as a result of this, these two crashes. And it's a terrible tragedy. And I wish that didn't happen. But I also think it's very unlikely that it's going to happen again. Just based on the, you start playing games with odds and total number of flights and, could you put yourself in a riskier position or a safer position? Sure. But I don't think that getting on one of them today is necessarily, presents a significant risk.
Yeah, I agree with you. The most dangerous part of your trip is driving to the airport, right?
Right. In my case, it used to be the subway. So now it's the bus ride. But, so I don't think that the type is inherently unsafe to the point that they're, a disaster waiting to happen. But I sure would like some more information. And I think, we'll get that eventually. It's hard to sort of sit around and wait for the details from the investigative authorities. I mean, we're still waiting to hear what happened on the 767 from Atlas that crashed into outside Houston the other day. Yep. And we, at least there, they've decoded a lot of the data and they're working on it. So we know what's happening. In this case, I think it's safe to assume that they should find the flight data recorder and cockpit voice recorder pretty quickly because, the CEO was already out on the crash site picking up debris and playing with it.
Okay, can we just talk about that for a second? Like, that was just, that's just weird. Like, one, I don't know that I want to be covered in jet fuel, potentially, or, human remains, or anything like that. Yeah. I also don't want to be messing with what is technically a crime scene, potentially.
Yeah. I found that, I will agree that I can understand him wanting to be there, both to show respect, to get some idea. There's a lot of good reasons for the CEO to be there. And I would say that overall, Ethiopian has actually done a bang up job on crisis communications. They have been out there aggressively communicating information when they have it and avoiding speculation where they don't. I think they've done a lot of things right. I think having the CEO there is fine. I think having him picking things up is a questionable move.
I agree. Like, I mean, it's great that he's out there saying, hey, we're here for the families and we're here to offer support. But actually walking through the crash site is odd.
Yeah. I also found it interesting that there were fewer Ethiopians on board than Canadians or Kenyans, if I remember correctly.
Interesting. So I was just going to say, like Ethiopian in Africa is a very large carrier, right? You have South African, Ethiopian, and Kenya Air kind of operating rather large airlines in, mainland Africa, I guess, Egypt Air as well, and maybe a few others. But looking at the passenger manifest and who was on board, it is a little surprising that there weren't more Ethiopians on board.
Right. I think it shows how good a job the company has done at building itself as a connecting hub. You had 30-odd, I think, Kenyans on board, who are all people that flew from other parts of the world, connected in Addis, and were going home, presumably. Yep. And then I'd assume that the Canadians had come in on the Toronto flight and, right, don't they do a Toronto service? And they were headed to Nairobi for tourism event or business, one or the other. Like, it's sort of interesting to sort of, try to create some of these stories, but it's, there were a handful of Americans also. When I did my Ethiopian flight, to Newark, there were more than a handful, but there was a lot of Americans there too. So they're all connecting. There was almost no one I don't think anyone originated in Addis, or a small number did relative to the number connecting. So, And I don't know how you count me because I had a 24 and a half hour layover, but.
Well, and I'll just add, Jerry asked you about, whether you would fly a MAX. I posted on Twitter. I'm a little hesitant. I don't believe in coincidence really when it comes to aviation things.
Yeah.
So I'm a little hesitant, but not saying they're all going to just fall out of the sky and that we should just freak out, but I'm not going to go out of my way to book a MAX. I'll just say it like that. If I have a choice between a regular 737 and a MAX, I'll probably go with the regular one.
Yeah, but some of us freaking flyers don't choose like Americans MAX because of the wonderful Oasis product. I'm being facetious here.
I was about to transition to that. I was going to say, would you really choose the regular 738 if it's one of the Oasis planes, knowing that American had trouble with some of the installs? Presumably those are all fixed now too, but...
As an American frequent flyer, I avoid the Oasis MAX as much as I can. It's just not for me. I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, and on top of it being generally seen as a much less comfortable version of the American plane, and I agree with that assessment overall. Last week, American had to ground, I believe, 14 of the planes that had their conversion work done. It's the Oasis is no longer just on the MAX. It's also on some of the regular 737-800s as they align their fleet configuration. And American is running that retrofit at three different locations, if I understand correctly. Tulsa and Greensboro are both in-house operations, I believe. I know Tulsa is. I'm not sure about Greensboro. And then Payne Field in Everett, a company called ATS, does retrofit work for American and a bunch of other airlines up there. The 14 planes that were retrofit at ATS came through another maintenance base, and two of them were found to be deficient in their setup. And so American grounded all 14 while they worked to remedy those deficiencies. So not great news.
Well, it's worse than that. They had to ground the planes, right? If they could gradually fix them, that's okay. But to me, this seems worse.
Yeah. And I don't know how long it took to fix them. I was going to try to see if I could find if they're back in the air yet or not. But there's enough of them flying that that's going to be a pain to figure out while we're talking.
Since I don't keep up with American, I had to go look up what the Oasis product was and kind of what's happening there. And you're saying that set the failures or the issues that they ran into were overhead bins, right? Like that was part of the issue.
So I don't know this for certain, so with a grain of salt, but my understanding is overhead bins weren't latching correctly, which usually means just a misalignment of the install. And also there's apparently some wiring up in behind them that may not have been properly shielded or sheathed or whatever, and there was a risk of abrasion and eventually short circuits and fires. So, hooray.
Yeah. So, Jerry, you're not a fan of this because of, it looks like they're keeping the same number of first class seats, but across the board, the pitch, right, is smaller for every type of seat on the plane. Is that your general feeling?
Yeah. So first of all, I love the bigger bins. I think Boeing calls them space bins, but they're really great. They're really big. That's good. They're brand new planes. Yeah, that's great. But the seats are so close together. Even in first class, when you sit down, it's hard to put your briefcase or your bag underneath the seat in front of you and grab it when you're in the air. Forget about coach.
Yeah, I think you're not the first person I've heard talking about the under seat space in first class and how limited it is. I actually flew the MAX in the Oasis configuration from DC to LA back in January. And I'm trying to remember now just if I really found it that painful with my bag. I don't remember it well enough because I only did it the once and I was pretty tired and I think napped half the flight anyways. But I certainly get the complaint that if you can't fit your bag underneath the seat in front of you, that's a problem.
Right. You might be right. There might be just as much space with the new slimline seats, but I guess it's the depth of 1,000 cuts, right? Over the years, they've constantly squished us together little by little. And I think myself and other frequent flyers I know have said, okay, enough is enough. You're giving us a teeny tiny little sliver of a bathroom. You're giving us a little bit of this. The food has gotten worse. I mean, AA, come on, uncle.
Yeah. Well, and that tiny bathroom is a problem.
Yeah, I agree. As someone who flies United's, slimline bathrooms every now and then, it is the worst bathroom I have ever been in. It's just, I don't know how anyone who's larger, slightly larger, not even overweight, just bigger in the shoulders, actually fits inside of that thing. Because I can't turn around. I can barely wash my hands. It's kind of ridiculous. So
And since the bad news, I can't find a picture of me with my bag under my seat that day. So either I didn't do it or I couldn't fit it or I thought it was too crazy to take the picture.
Yeah. And one last thing, since we're, complaining about the squished configurations these days, is for me, it's not an issue, but lack of IFE, in-flight entertainment. For me, I have my iPad. I'm okay. But I'm just thinking about my kids and my parents. They don't know how to download movies and music to their phones.
Yeah.
And trying to do that on the fly while they're about to get on a plane isn't also the easiest thing either.
Right.
Yeah, this one was an interesting. I just am laughing at that because someone mocked, was snarky at American for ripping out the in-flight entertainment screens, and they responded back that they still deliver the best entertainment on board through the streaming solutions, and that's clearly not true, but they said it, so they believe it.
I guess. What were you going to say, Seth, about the Southwest mechanics in the 737s? I mean, you were kind of talking about, wanting to mention that in the show.
Yeah, I think it's it's different, but, you know, we start talking about the various 737 challenges and knowing that that battle between the mechanics and management at Southwest is ongoing. It's just another one of those things that, you know, adds to my, you know, things that make you go, kind of what's going on in the industry. And, you know, Southwest claiming that the planes are less safe than management wants them to, you know, the management is projecting, and that, you know, all the write-ups are legit and these are things that need to be fixed. And should they be grounded or not? I don't know. It's just, it's one more thing. And that drama has certainly not subsided since we started talking about it. And, you know, hearing the reports and, you know, Southwest management, in there was a big investor conference last week where all the airlines got their 15 minutes of fame, and Southwest said they're losing millions of dollars a week because of these airplanes being grounded and additional costs and whatever. So that's it's all adds up, obviously, at some point to something. I don't know necessarily what yet, but there's some weird stuff going on.
Yeah, and so, you know, kind of off topic a little bit, but I just wanted to bring it up. I was going through the schedules for Southwest's new Hawaiian service that they're going to offer out of California. I found it interesting that there's actually no way to connect eastward same day for most of the flights coming back to the mainland. So you can either spend the night, and then since they don't operate red eyes, that's pretty much your only option. Did you guys notice that? I think it's odd. I mean, or is Southwest just primarily targeting O&D traffic out of California?
I thought there was a couple that landed early enough.
There's a few, but not a ton.
Yeah, so, most of them would cause you to miss any connections. But I think that also is because Southwest is trying to increase utilization of the planes, right? When they fly to Hawaii, they're going to do little hops there and then come back to the mainland.
Yep. And just keep them on the West Coast until they need
them. I'm looking, there's a 9:30 a.m. out of Honolulu that gets to Oakland at 5:50. So you're saying there's no good departures after 7 o'clock out of Oakland?
Not really, no.
Not to the East Coast.
Well, certainly not to the East Coast.
Not even to the central U.S., really. I think there may be like a 7 or 8 p.m. to Love and maybe something to like Albuquerque. I'd have to look at their Oakland schedule. What I saw, it wasn't great. Like, this isn't some kind of service that you're going to be able to sell to, say, people in Houston or even further east as a viable option.
Well, and I think that's probably fair. I think they knew that going in. The California market, and they said their release was basically the people in California aren't going to the Caribbean, right? That we need to get them to and from Hawaii. And so that's going to be their market. I can't, you know, if you basically the Pacific time zone, I would imagine maybe Las Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah. But, that makes sense. Yeah.
You know, I do find it amusing to an extent when they launched those crazy fare, you know, when they launched their service, they started with $49 one-way fares, obviously, you know, marketing hype and whatever, and don't expect them to stay that low forever. But A, you can still get the inter-island fares pretty cheap. So that's going to be a bloodbath between them and Hawaiian. But B, American at least matched on a number of routes. So I know someone who found DFW to Kona nonstop for like under 300 round trip because Southwest published that fare, even with the ridiculous connection and the overnights and whatever. American matched it and didn't limit it only to connecting flights. And so it certainly had the effect of screwing up revenue for the entire industry, if that's what Southwest meant to do.
So and for customers, it has some, you know, for us as flyers, it is good for us, right? Even if we can't take advantage of Southwest flights directly.
Yeah. Cheaper fares are, to an extent, always good for consumers. There's the point where they become too cheap and airlines go out of business, and that's bad. But we're not there yet.
Does Southwest do any red-eye flights? I don't think so. And if they did, if they don't, see, I think this would be the first one, so they can't.
Yeah. And part of that is a business decision. Part of that was also and I don't think it's an issue anymore, but their old PSS, their old back-end computer systems didn't support it.
Yeah. And I think they said that now they have the technical capabilities, but I think it actually would require them to renegotiate some contracts. Which I don't think that they're willing to do just yet.
The flight attendants and pilots would have to agree to support them, and which is different from the mechanics union. So that's good news. But at least right now, the pilots are, you know, on record supporting their brethren in the mechanics group. So probably still not a great situation.
So I think we've beat the 737 to death. What about you? What do you guys think?
You want to talk fan blades? Foss isn't here. I guess
we can't do fan blades. Let's talk about visas and the new rumored European visa that is coming in 2020. This is essentially the ESTA system, but for Europe, correct, Seth?
Yeah, it's ETIAS, I think they're calling it, ETIAS, maybe, and it's not a visa, and it's 2021, if I remember correctly, and everybody just needs to chill the F out.
Well, that was easy.
Yes.
Jerry, any comments?
To me, it's Europeans doing to what we do to them. In other words, we require Europeans to go onto a website, fill out a form, pay a few bucks, and they're just doing it to us. And okay, fine. I don't get it, but all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's annoying. It's frustrating in some ways. We already do it for Australia. If you've traveled to Australia at any time in the, I want to say past 15 at least years, probably longer than that, you had a similar ETA, I think is what Australia calls it. But then you have to go to a website and fill out a form and pay some money. The Australian one, I've never had a delay of more than like 30 seconds in getting it approved. This one with us, with the European Union, they're claiming up to 96 hours and €7 for the fee. I think the Australian one's more expensive than that, unless you know someone in Australia or a travel agent who processes it for you for free. It's annoying, right? Because I'm, especially like I'm so used to just getting on a plane and going and not thinking about it, that, to have to think about it, even if it's only every 3 years, is something else I just have to worry about and try to make sure I've done far enough in advance. At the same time, I just can't get worked up about it. I don't know. I'm having a hard time caring, especially because we're so much worse to everybody who comes to visit the United States.
And so to be clear, right, like it is a once every 3 years thing, right? And it's good for the 90 days stay, correct?
Yeah, so it's your 90 day stay or the duration of your stay still comes down to other rules. And so there's a 90 day max single stay. There's 180 days in any 365. There's a lot of little things like that for a tourist visit. And then you can have business visas and other work visas and other things like that. But it's not a visa. And that's, that might be minutia and semantics and, mincing words, but it's not a visa. And so that's part of what gets me frustrated. The other thing about it that I find amusing is that it sort of became news last week because, as I understand it, one of the what appear to be many commercial websites that will help you process your application when the time comes, even though we don't know exactly what's involved or what the process is going to be or what the exact cost is and all of those things yet. The process doesn't exist yet, but these guys are going to solve that problem for you. And they've got a fancy splash page now talking about what the problems are going to be. They put up this little website and then they put out a press release. And a bunch of people were like, oh my God, this is crazy, and started running stories about it. And these guys manipulated the hell out of the media to get all the inbound links they want. Next, if you go searching for ETIAS on the website, on the internet, like they come up first and then there's a couple others below them. They really nailed it at completely manipulating the entire story. So kudos to you, gentlemen.
For their own benefit, really.
Yes. Yes. For something that literally doesn't matter for 18 months, at least, and probably not even after that.
Yeah.
Too much. I mean, it matters. You obviously gotta have to do it, but like in the grand scheme of things, very small.
So say for countries like Germany, right? So
yep.
They have a global entry type system that we can, it's equal to ours. Pretty much, you can use the e-gates and stuff.
Kiosks, yeah. Yep.
How is that going to work here? Like, do you still have to, I'm guessing you still have to do this, and then your information is just kind of ready as you go through the machine.
I'm assuming that's the case. I've registered for that as well. It's pretty cool. You get to use the e-gates, but they still stamp me usually.
Yeah, typically.
And actually, last time I went through, I tried to use the e-gate and it rejected me, and I had to go back through a regular line. So I got to stop and ask someone about that.
Yep.
But I imagine that this is separate from that, and in the sense that this will be an additional requirement, but it won't change whether you can use those or not.
Yep.
If you already have access, you can continue to do that. And I think we talked about it a couple of years ago when we were all signing up the first time around. That is a really cool, neat thing to do and can save you a chunk of time clearing at, I think, Munich, Frankfurt, Hamburg, and Berlin.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's those. I think those are the ones.
Those are the ones. Except they don't really have the gates for departing Hamburg. So I don't know.
Well, and in Munich, it only sometimes works, I think. And then other times, it's like you just go through the regular line. So
yeah.
I've had mixed experiences. But
right in Frankfurt for me.
So let's talk about a new logo or a rumored new logo. United had some, there were some tweets and some stories about United potentially getting a new livery. And with that, potentially a new logo or a redesigned version of the globe. And that was on Flight Global. That story came out.
Yep.
And then a rumored image came out, and I tweeted about it, and I think others did too. And some people have said it's old. It's from like 2013, which all I can say is thank God, because it was awful.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the livery itself. So the rumors are that the gold is kind of going away. That's in United's logo, and it's going to move more towards like a teal and what would
the teal and purple?
Purple,
plum, whatever. Yeah, we can't call it plum because that's Delta's, right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind the new color palette. I think it's a little strange that they introduced it in the uniforms and in the seats and in everything else before introducing it into the full branding of the livery. I think typically a rebranding comes from the livery and then everything else. But other than that, I also really just don't care about aircraft liveries.
Yeah. Fly on the inside of the plane. Is that what you like to say, Seth?
I do. I usually sit inside.
Yes, Seth, I agree with you. I don't care about what the paint is on the outside. Just instead of taking and spending a bunch of money to redo the colors, why not just roll out Polaris a little bit faster?
Yeah. There's a lot of things you could spend the money on. That said, I do understand, you know, I hate to admit it, marketing does work. So, like, yeah, you do have to do it. But I do also wonder about it sometimes.
Yeah, but when I go and look at the airport, you know, I know what's going on, but to say my parents or something, they're going to say, oh, well, we have the old airplane, you know, with the old colors on it. So it must not be as good a plane. And the new one with the new livery is going to be the nicer one, which isn't always true. We know that. So,
yeah,
it's true. Yeah. I mean, I think there is like some image things that happen there where people see, oh, it's a fresh new livery. I think one of the items that I notice when I look at airplanes is a lot of planes are these new white paint jobs where that's they're using just a very plain livery. You notice dirt, one, a lot more. And you notice like the doors where the jetway connects to the aircraft. You notice that being rubbed against and dirtied much more often than you used to, say, with United's battleship livery, which was usually chipped and, you know, scarred anyway. But you notice the dirt less.
the dirt blended into the gray nicely.
Yeah, it was perfect. It was perfect.
You really notice it on Air France because I don't know what it is with their white, but their planes always look dirty.
I think it's because they don't wash their planes. That's my real opinion there. I mean, I've seen like a brand new plane for Air France. I think it was a 787 maybe I saw parked at Dulles. I don't remember where I was, but it was like I looked it up and it was only maybe a week old and it was filthy. It just blew my mind. So one does not know. South African Airlines had a little bit of an incident with a pilot who was operating planes as a first officer without a pilot's license. And so, he did this for, 25 years? 20 years? 20 years.
Yeah, 20 years. It's... I'm so confused. It sounds like he was a pilot, but like he had a commercial license, but not a ATPL, an airline transport pilot license. So he also never really renewed his certificates. He forged the paperwork and just kept resubmitting them to the airlines, showing that he was legal. Like it's not like I walked in and was like, oh, hey, guys, I'm flying today.
Yeah. So basically he was lazy. Is that what you're saying?
And didn't complete necessarily all of the training. He had a commercial pilot's license, not an ATPL, not an airline transport. So you still have to do a certain amount of work and get trained in how to operate, you know, the thing. There is a lot going on there that is more than just, you know, a nobody showing up and pretending to fly the plane. But he also, he got busted because of making some wrong turns, I think they said, over the Alps. And then when someone started digging into his, it was a reportable incident, and someone started digging into his licensing details, I'm like, you don't really work here.
Yeah.
Or you shouldn't anyways. And so I think he also like wasn't doing the recurrent training in the simulators. It's unclear if he was passing his medical. Awkward.
And South African, I think, says they're going to try to go back and claim all that extra money he got.
Because... reclaim all his salary.
Wow.
This is a great line in the story. Mr. Chandler had reportedly refused a promotion to captain that would have required him to resubmit his ATPL certificate.
So he actually avoided a position change.
Yeah.
To not have to put this paperwork forward, right?
It's also like, I don't know, it seems strange that they could have a list of like licensed pilots and not have a way to immediately cross-reference those against something.
Yeah.
Like, here's the guy, the licenses don't have like an ID number or something associated with them that I can upload a file to you and you can tell me if they're valid or not. And like, this seems like a very basic data problem that someone should have solved a long time ago.
I agree.
On the plus side, you know, no planes crashed and South Africa's still losing buckets of money. So maybe recovering his salary will keep them in business an extra month.
Who knows, though, because they seem to really be struggling.
Yeah, I can't imagine the government really lets them go out of business is the problem.
Yeah, that's true. Yes. I was trying to find, there was a TCAS incident at Chicago the other day. I wanted to find it real quick. Let me see if I can find it while we're continue talking amongst yourselves.
But you're in charge of the topics.
Oh, yes.
How will I know what to talk about?
I believe it was between a American flight and Envoy, which is American.
Yeah. All right. I've got a question. Jerry, you've given up on Advantage. What happened, man? You're almost at 3 million miler. That's like, what, lifetime Platinum Pro? Is that right?
You know, I don't even know.
Maybe.
But yeah.
But you're still 2 million miler, which is lifetime Platinum, which isn't a terrible status to have and work with. And yet you've given up?
Yeah, let's put it this way. It's not that I've given up. It's that when I have a choice, let's say I need to fly from LA to Detroit, in the old days, I would go out of my way to make sure I took American because I knew if something happened, they would take care of me. I can take my wife, you know, every year on our big trip someplace. You know, we always had, you know, use miles for that. They took care of me and I gave them some money, you know, either directly through me or my employer, and everybody was happy. But over time, again, like I said before, it's the death of a thousand cuts, you know,
sure,
little by little, you know, to me, Platinum is nothing anymore. Platinum Pro or even Executive Platinum is probably the minimum to get taken care of. You know, in fact, was it about 3-4 weeks ago, I was on a flight and I, you know, signed up for automatic upgrades. And I think it was like number 43 on the upgrade list. So basically over time, I've just given up. So now if I need to fly that same flight to Detroit, I'm a free agent. You know, whoever's got the most convenient schedule, cheaper for the company, that's who I'll take. I mean, if there's something dodgy or if, you know, I need to go to 14 locations and I'm afraid of, you know, something happening, I know American will prioritize me over a regular customer, whatever that means. But still, it's just, I'm tired of it. I've got a bunch of miles in my account, and every time I try to use them, just, you know, just not convenient.
Mm.
And I think a lot, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, do you find yourself having a lot of trouble finding reward space? Is that your main thing, or just reward space where you're trying to go, et cetera?
It's just the hassle, right? It's not easy. I'm willing to take a little bit of pain, but just Americans just not loyal to me. They're not taking care of me like they used to. You know, several years ago, as a Platinum or Executive Platinum, when I landed in Heathrow, there'd be somebody there with a little placard that would, you know, have my name on it. Mr. Jerry, let's take you over to this connecting flight. You know, how was your flight? Blah, blah, blah. I got lots of good perks when I traveled quite a bit. Now it's nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. I became free agent a long time ago, so I buy it. I'm just, you know, it's also a hard realization to come to, I feel like. It's hard to say, you know, and then one day it's an epiphany, and you're like, what the hell have I been doing this whole time? But for a long time, you sit there and you're like, no, I must be getting some value out of this. Like, I've got all these points, I've got all these benefits, I've got the status. And then one day you realize that maybe it wasn't all that great. It's hard.
Exactly.
And Jerry, how often do you travel?
Nowadays I've cut back. So it's about once a month, I'll take a trip someplace, either domestic or international.
Gotcha. Okay.
So yeah, again, international, right? In the old days, I would look at American and play their game, go through Heathrow or go the other way through Tokyo, and connect to JAL or somebody else. But now, you know, I'll take ANA or I'll take Singapore all the way because it's simpler.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Especially, I mean, you're in California, correct? I believe that's what you said.
That's right. LA area. Yep.
So for you taking the Singapore flight nonstop to Singapore, it's just, that's a convenience thing, really, right? Not having to connect anywhere.
Yeah. Well, so, even if I did have to connect, right, it's just simpler.
Yep. Yep, makes perfect sense. Last story of this show, I wanted to talk about Airbnb buying Hotel Tonight. What do you guys think?
Excited.
You're excited?
I feel like I should be.
Why?
Actually, so I think it might actually make Hotel Tonight relevant again.
Okay, I get that. Does it make Airbnb relevant? Or more relevant?
Maybe? To me, yes. Okay. And so here's the problem. Airbnb is good at some things and bad at others, generally speaking. One of the things, for me at least as a consumer, it's bad at is last minute and short stays. I tend to not use it for one night stays because the process of coordinating and everything else is kind of a pain in the ass. And if you end up in you have to determine if the person you're booking with, the host, is sort of ready to run a hotel or renting out an apartment, mm-hmm. and how flexible they are and how good they're going to be at that. And you often don't know until you're way too late in the process. So I tend to avoid them for that sort of thing. And I also spend a lot of trips booking last minute rooms. I mean, we've talked about this many times. I will wait till I'm on the plane or, you know, an hour out from Los Angeles before confirming my hotel room for that night.
Yep.
Kind of because I don't care and I'd like to play chicken a little bit with the pricing. But in my experience, it keeps going down that last minute as long as there's enough rooms available overall. But, you know, those are situations where Hotel Tonight has been very good to me and Airbnb would have been a total waste. So if they can gain some of that overlapped business and, you know, fire a bunch of people in HR and tech and whatnot and do a better job integrating and developing it as a single platform, that should be good for me.
Mm.
But at the same time, like, who the hell knows? So, right? I mean, I have no idea if it's really going to get there or if this is Airbnb trying again to be a hotel operator and booking engine that's going to fail.
And do you think, I mean, just to give our listeners some context here, Hotel Tonight is more of I want to say central location to look for last minute rooms, really?
So it launched as literally an app where you could only book a Hotel Tonight, right? And they had deals with a few hundred smaller properties around the country, or around the world. Most of my experience with them that's been useful has been in the United States. They may have had some international. And you could search and find, like, last minute, oh gosh, I need a room in LA. Hey, look, here's a fancy hotel that's normally $300 a night for $100. And they were good deals. They had these one-off contracts. It was essentially distressed inventory a la the sort of Priceline auctioning off hotel airfares and stuff. There was a lot of neat stuff about that, but they also came up short in the, like, that wasn't enough revenue. That wasn't generating enough revenue for them. And so then it started, gosh, well, I need to be able to sell more hotel nights because they make their commission. The earnings was based on how many nights they booked. And so they needed to make more money. And so then it wasn't just tonight. It was, you know, tomorrow or through the end of the week. Now they're booking windows 100 days out.
Mm.
And the prices change throughout that period, like they should, because, you know, prices are variable. But it's not nearly as consistent a user experience. And you're not quite as sure as what you're getting, I feel like, as you used to be in the past. But it's also given me an opportunity to, like, look around and see what other options maybe exist. So I don't know.
Yeah. I'm
skeptical. Great for them if, you know, Airbnb can do it. But I just think if Hilton or Bonvoy got their act together, they could do something similar with theirs, you know, save a little bit of money and then clean up.
First of all, props to you for using the Bonvoy name to refer to Marriott. I appreciate it because I can never remember to do it. But I kind of agree with you. I think I could see the other hotel chains kind of jumping on this and saying, well, we'll offer last minute, you know, distressed inventory if you search through our engine or through hotels.com or something like that.
Yeah. And so the big legacy operators, I don't know what the right word is, but the big brands all actually teamed up and have a site called RoomKey that is, they've had it for a few years now. This was their sort of way to try to beat back the OTAs. And it's a meta search engine that will redirect the user to the direct booking. So they all sort of chip in and run the OTA, but they don't have to pay the 20 to 30% commissions that typically come with these indirect bookings.
So it's like Google Flights for hotels?
Sort of, with the copy, but right, Google Flights gets paid on some of those click-throughs, whereas these guys are not necessarily paying out to themselves. They just, you know, all agreed to operate the website. So it's a different revenue model. They don't need to necessarily, you know, generate more and more and more bookings through Roomkey. It sort of just sits and runs itself. I will say the Marriott branded the Marriott chains all now show like price too low to show instead of the real number, because they're trying to pretend that they're like 2% discount you get or whatever is useful.
Oh, like going and by going directly
for being a member.
Yeah,
for being a member, yep. And booking through, whatever. It's stupid. I found that very frustrated. Very frustrating when I looked at it. So, but yeah, the other thing is the main property inventory that Airbnb or that Hotel Tonight has been using has been off-brand hotels. So yes, the other guys could all compete by starting to sell those, but right now that's not what they're doing.
Yeah, so. I noticed when looking at the Hotel Tonight, it's a lot of Kimptons, especially here in Portland. There's some Hiltons and Embassy Suites. You know, I noticed that.
Yeah,
but not there's like one Courtyard, and that's it.
So the other thing to note, though, is most of those are going to be regular booking rates. Like that's not you're not going to be getting a discount necessarily on those.
Mm.
That Hotel Pineapple down on the waterfront. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep. Yep.
I would bet that they would be the type of hotel that would have a deal with Hotel Tonight that. For last minute inventory would give stuff up.
Gotcha. Yep. Makes sense.
So that's where I would start to say, you know, what the opportunities are and stuff. It's an interesting situation, but those are the types of properties where they negotiate the discounts. And so that's the other problem with Hotel Tonight is instead of knowing that you're getting a good deal because it's one of their direct negotiated whatever discounts, they mix in just generic OTA rates.
Gotcha.
And yeah. You're never quite sure. It makes it harder to be confident in your choice. And, you know, I certainly go overboard in that, you know, I spend hours and hours. I probably spend more hours searching for hotel room nights than I spend sleeping in the hotel on those room nights. So I have a problem and I admit it, but I'm not going
to
change.
I think that's why sometimes like when you're like trying to figure out where to stay and like you and I are on a trip together, I'm like, dude, just stay with me and split the cost.
Yeah. and half the time I'm like, yeah, okay, fine. Like at some level, I just don't need to like get stuck in the decision paralysis, but I'm always like, if I'm doing it myself, it's like this game of there's got to be some more creative, fun, crazy thing I can find or do or whatever.
Yep.
So,
yep. Oh man. One other story I completely forgot about, and I think it's worrisome, but it's also kind of hilarious. Vietnam Airlines was taking delivery of an Airbus. It was an A321, I think. And it had an engine failure en route. It was an A321neo, and one of its Pratt & Whitney engines had a gear fan issue. And it was at cruise, and they had to land and fix it immediately. So literally probably the most costly brand new plane in the history of deliveries.
didn't even make it to the airline to start service before it broke.
And it stopped in Baku, Azerbaijan to have the fixes done. So it was the sixth flight of the plane since it had taken its first flight in January. Oh, good stuff. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
Do we have time for one more quick one?
Yeah, sure.
I got another American topic. So I carry the Barclays Aviator Red Card, not for much longer, though. And one of the nice benefits from that card is a 10% rebate on all awards. So you book a 100,000 point reward, you take your trip, you get 10,000 points back. Nice little way to score some extra points for not too much money for the annual fee. That benefit is going away, which makes me wonder if it's worth paying the annual fee. Then I get a message saying the annual fee is going up, which makes me even less inclined. But there's a brand new program called Flight Sense, C-E-N-T-S, like pennies. And Flight Sense, if you enroll in it, and I believe it's optional, it better be, because otherwise they're going to get in some
20
trouble.
$20, yeah.
Every transaction you make on your credit card, they round up to the nearest whole dollar. So the example they give you is you buy a $3, 10-cent cup of coffee. They round it up to 90 cents. They charge you the full $4, and that 90 cents extra gets pooled and eventually, at the end of the month, with all these extra pennies or cents that you've quote unquote saved, they buy you points at 2 cents per point.
Mm.
And so I did some rough math. If you say the average person does one transaction a day on a relatively used card, high use card, which I think is fair, and we'll say that the average transaction cents remaining is going to be 50 cents because who knows, you end up with $15 or $20 a month. Which multiply it out, whatever, 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 you end up with a few $100 a year that each of these people is going to be spending extra to buy 10 to 15,000 extra advantage points. And on the one hand, I think it's genius on the part of Advantage and Barclays for coming up with a way to sell more points that people probably won't notice. But the flip side of it is, like, it feels a little bit like a scam of forcing someone into buying points at these rates. And it's, you're not necessarily forcing, you make the choice and it's a passive thing, whatever. But it's like, most of the times I see these types of roll up or rounding savings accounts, it's either at the grocery store where the money goes to a charity,
yep,
or in your savings account on a debit card, or on a debit card where it goes into your savings account. And like, the idea that this has somehow been equated to that rubs me the wrong way.
Jerry, I'll defer to you first.
Yeah, I think it's fine if you're a big American fan and you're just looking for, you know, extra things to make you feel better and get more points. I think for the average traveler, it's just, it's okay.
Yeah. And here's the thing, like, 2 cents per point is better than retail, but not as good as the best discounted rates they sell at, which when they do the 100% bonus, which comes up relatively often or often enough. But also, when you go to get that big bonus, you have to commit to buying a huge number of points, not the 5 and 10 thousands that these people are going to get. So if you think you want to buy 5,000 extra points a year at a decent price, this is a way to do it at a decent price. I would say you probably shouldn't be buying 5 to 10,000 points a year though, even at this point, at price point. So I don't know. I think it's interesting and creative, and I'm intrigued by it, but also a little annoyed by it. On the plus side, it finally makes it easy for me to say I'm getting rid of the card this year. I haven't paid the annual fee in several years. I keep calling in and tell them that I'm not paying the annual fee, and they just waive it. But I think this is going to be
you'll actually.
I guess if they waive it again, like the only reason I was keeping it is that I still got the 10% back, and I don't get that anymore. So that was where I got value from the card.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, the 10% back to me makes sense to keep the card, but the rounding up kind of math doesn't really. I don't know. It doesn't really jive for me. Not something I'm a fan of anywhere. So, one question I have for Jerry, since you're an AA flyer, Jerry, how do you feel about the rumors of American potentially going the way of Delta with system-wide upgrades and having it so that you can only upgrade, say, you, the primary account holder, and anyone on the traveling on the same reservation or with you on the trip?
Well, I have mixed feelings. First of all, I think, again, it's another one of these slow cuts, right? Here we go again. Another reduction of benefits to their people they're supposed to be good to. But on the other hand, again, I don't have the data, but I suspect that 98% of all system-wide upgrades are just individual flyers, and rarely do people bring, you know, their spouse and their kids or whatever with them.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to impact too many. I think it's just making IT easier for them. I don't get why they're doing it.
Yeah, I would argue that the real reason you do this is to stop people selling them. Mm. The IT would be harder in some ways because you have to build something to enforce this rule as opposed to just what exists today. But, you know, I think that if they are doing this, it's another means to try to stop people from selling them. The counterpoint there is, like, I have both upgraded and been the upgradee from random friends with system wides on multiple airlines. And these are not people we don't have. There's not a cash transaction. There's not even a non-cash transaction. We're friends and we do nice things for each other sometimes. Like, I've got one now, you'll have one later. We'll make it work. So I don't know. That's would suck to lose that. But if they really think there's that much fraud going on in the program and they're sick of trying to enforce it at a granular level, this is the way you fix that.
Yeah. And I, so for me with United, like, it would be an impact to me if I, like, I just typically give away regional upgrades and system-wide upgrades near the end of the year. Sometimes I usually don't travel near the end of the year, either for work or pleasure. And I can't use some of these things by then. So they're going to go to waste. So I typically give them to friends who are traveling home to see friends or family, and with no cash or any kind of exchange. I just say, hey, you're traveling? Here, have this. Enjoy. Like, why cross the country in coach if I can just give this to you? I'm not going to use it. So for me, it makes sense to be able to give them away. But I understand the fraud side of it, or the selling side of it, like wanting to cut down on that, on this kind of black market or gray market that exists out there. So I get that. But I think it is a little annoying for those of us who are just trying to, you know, do the friendly thing for our friends and family.
Yeah, I understand the claims of such. I'll say that.
Yes, exactly. Oh, well, gentlemen, I think that is a show. What do you think?
I found a deal on Hotels Tonight just now for next week while we're talking.
Oh, gosh. Where are you going next week?
New York City. I'll be in New York for a couple nights. So
nice.
If anyone's around New York on the 19th or 20th and wants to grab a beer, let me know.
There you go. Well, Jerry, thank you for coming on the show. Thanks for responding on Twitter and saying, hey, you'd love to be on the show. I think that's awesome. People can find you on Twitter at Jamboree, and that's at JAMBOREE, if they want to chat with you and talk about what it's like to almost be a 3 billion miler. But yeah, thanks for being on the show, and thanks for listening.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. You can find us on Twitter at DotsLines or online, moredotsmorelines.com. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show and talk about your passion or your, account with one airline or another, feel free to drop us a note. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, happy travels.
Take care.
Bye.